So hello and welcome back to another Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. My name's Chris Hill and I've been hosting these podcasts for the last few weeks during lockdown and self-isolation, and it's been really, really good to do so. We've managed to speak to so many people who've been involved with Loose Heads about sort of the work they're doing with the foundation and also their rugby career. So it's been a pleasure to be in part of the Loose Heads team, which is obviously headed up by Mark Shotton, Rob Shotton and Dave Nicol. How are we doing today, guys?
Very well, thank you.
Excellent. And one of the things that you guys have been doing recently is the chats with Ugo Monio on a Tuesday night, if that's right, and saying on Instagram. And one of his guests over the last couple of weeks was none other than World Cup winner and I believe Super Rugby Player of the Decade, if the statistics are right. It's Elton Yantis, who now joins us on the podcast. Elton, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
I have chucked that in there about Super Rugby Player of the Decade because I read before that statistically that's what you called.
Yeah, that's something they've announced a few weeks ago. I didn't think about it. Something new that I've heard. When I got the messages, congratulations, and then I actually thanked the people, and then it gave me some time to reflect on my career. I'm not that old yet.
Yeah, I was gonna say still plenty more to come from you, I hope, Elton. But it's brilliant to have you on the podcast. And just to go back to that chat with Ugo that you had a couple of weeks ago, Elton, I mean, what was sort of the main reason why you wanted to get involved and be on the Loose Heads channel that evening?
I feel like personally to stay in touch with the world, to stay in touch with especially society, just rugby and outside of rugby. Hopefully we can make a difference and keep people positive during this difficult period from a mental point of view and from a physical point of view. It's quite easy to sit in the gym and do your workout for like 45 to an hour, but then you still have another 10 or 11 hours that you're still up and you're trying to figure out ways to stay positive. A lot of people are reading the media, the news, and from us in South Africa, we're still in level 4. So hopefully we can go to level 3 and that's a little bit positivity around the country. We're trying to, for me personally, to stay in touch with the people on the outside, especially the youth as well, and definitely big time in rugby.
And Mark, it must be really pleasing to hear Elton talk about those things, because we did a podcast yesterday and a video yesterday with Team Mental Health, who work closely with you guys, and they actually talked a lot about what Elton's just said there about keeping connected with people, but also keeping connected with the younger people in society as well, because mental health is such a broad topic which everyone needs to be aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. And Team Mental Health are trying to help us with giving everybody bite-sized chunks to build a mental health strategy. It's so nice when you get a true global superstar like Elton coming on and saying, this is what I do. Proper role model makes all the difference.
Definitely. Because Elton, I was going to ask you how lockdown has been in South Africa. You said there, hopefully it's going to get reduced to level 3. But how has that been over in South Africa for you?
Yeah, I must say, to be honest, very positive in terms of the response from the people on the outside. The president, as soon as he said there's a lockdown, everybody responded collectively. And then in the last few weeks, certain shops was allowed to open. Gradually we trying to open up and keep the economy going. So people are getting a lot of positivity out of that. But for me, generally, just to see that our streets were quiet and people were following the rules. And then obviously the people in the forefront, the medical staffs, the doctors, the military, the police, they all bought into the plan and people responded quite well. We didn't have a lot of incidents where people didn't listen to the president or the minister. So that was a positive thing for us. That's why I feel we are ready to go to level 3, and then hopefully we'll see how the response is in terms of the COVID.
Absolutely. And of course, the bigger picture is making sure everyone is safe, everyone stays well. And there, Elton, you are one of the world stars of the game, so you must have been keeping on top of your fitness during this time as well. How important is it to stay active as well during this period of lockdown?
Yeah, that's big time. I mean, we had meetings with the union at the Lions, and then we had meetings with the Springbok management as well. So that's priority number one, is conditioning. Apart from the technical side, the game plan or the analyzing side, the biggest thing at the moment for us as rugby players in the Springbok squad and as the union is to maintain our fitness and conditioning, so that when we get back or when we get the heads up, we're allowed to train together, that we can actually handle the training load, because it's gonna take a lot of strain. I feel coaches are gonna push us. There's gonna be a big load in every single day. So I think the rehab and the staying fit and staying conditioned, that's gonna play a big part, and that will determine when we're gonna play test rugby or we're gonna have a local competition. I'm not sure yet what's the plans about that.
Mm-hmm. And Rob, we mentioned in a couple of podcasts that we've done recently, but as Elton says there, he's been keeping active, but it's from a mental health point of view, it's important to stay active as well, isn't it, during this time?
Yeah, we've spoken about it before on previous podcasts, you know, that we've also spoken about, you know, the stats don't lie, two out of three rugby players struggle with a mental health problem post-retirement. So we want to highlight the importance of preparing for life after rugby. There's a lot of people out there at all levels of the game that are struggling in silence. Aren't quite willing to open up yet, but that's where our work can hopefully help tackle the stigma and sort of ensure that they do talk and know that it's okay to do so.
Absolutely. And alongside sort of your work, obviously keeping active, Elton, I've seen you've been out in the community as well doing deliveries, if that's right, and saying on Instagram. So that probably goes back to your point before about connecting with people during this time as well.
Yeah, definitely. For me, I've got a good friend, Gavin Verigis. He's one of those SA Rugby. He's the president of SA Rugby Legends. So he's running a big program for especially players for life after rugby. And we've been building on that relationship even though I'm still playing. It's just to get a lot of knowledge from him and to get in, like, to get a bit of insight of what players are doing after rugby. You know, not a lot of boys got a plan after rugby. And that's where he comes in and trying to implement foundations and to work on certain strategies to look after us when we're done with rugby, whether you're going to business or whether you want to be a coach. And I think he's really doing a good job. And at the moment, he's just trying to feed the hunger, because in South Africa, to be honest, that's one of our biggest problems at the moment, is to feed the ones that's hungry. And to provide for them, and when he asked me about that, and I definitely said yes. Just to we all know that feeling when you're hungry. You know, it's not like a feeling. So some of us are blessed enough to actually eat whatever we want, but there's a lot of people on the streets, in shelters and stuff like that, especially in South Africa, that's hungry. We don't even look at sanitizer or washing our hands and stuff, we're looking at feeding them. So that's something special, and that's something I will keep on doing every single week and try and change people's lives or try and keep them going. There's a lot of kids on the streets as well.
And Dave, you said before we started this podcast that it's great to hear these world names in the game like Elton and the guys we've had on the podcast previously talk about the work in the community with such passion, because it can be a thing from an outsider or a rugby fan's point of view to say, well, untouchable, rugby is the day-to-day life. But when we speak to them, like Elton just said, they are normal people who want to help people who are less fortunate than them.
Yeah, completely. I think kind of over the last sort of 6-7 weeks, we've really seen an opportunity for these guys to properly humanise themselves. You know, they go out on the pitch every week and put themselves through, you know, something I don't think anyone can really imagine without having played at that level. But to see them kind of going out, helping in the community, or whether they're just having sort of a chat with Ugo on a Tuesday night and the kids are interrupting them in the middle of it, it's nice to see that guys that were normally out there sort of celebrating in stadiums are actually just normal people like the rest of us.
100%, Dave. Well, it's brilliant work that you've been doing, Elton, and it's, you know, really pleasing to get you on the podcast to talk about that. But if you don't mind, to just go on to your rugby career now. And I mean, listening to some of your fellow World Cup winners after the final and before the World Cup final in, a few months ago, they were talking about their journeys in the game and growing up in South Africa and playing rugby. I mean, what was that kind of experience like for you? Did you always dream to become a rugby player when you were younger?
Yeah, when I was my first year, first birthday cake was a rugby ball. So then I sort of, hopefully I knew I'm going to play rugby. But thanks to my dad, you know, I was blessed enough that he was a rugby player. He played in the military and he played for Western Province as well. So I was sort of like, I grew up in a rugby environment. I've got a younger brother as well. So the two of us, we were always looking, watching daddy play over the weekends. And that's sort of how the love of rugby started. But then I had cricket as well on the side, but rugby was always a drive, you know. And then 1995, when Frans Wimpina won the World Cup, there was a big vibe around rugby. I won't say I'm born to play rugby, but I was born in a family where I could see my father playing rugby, and that's where I got the love for rugby, and I really wanted to do that. I wanted to play for the Springboks one day. That was always the goal.
And you said before that you obviously aren't that old, Elton, but do you remember anything around the 95 World Cup? Do you remember sort of the vibe when you were growing up?
To be honest, nothing. I only know Jonah Loma.
I think everyone remembers Jonah.
I promise you. For me, it was only Jonah and his haircut. That's all I remember. Yeah.
But you speak there so positively and about your dad, who obviously was a great mentor of yours, Elton. So how much of an influence did, I know you mentioned it there, but how much of an influence did he have on your career? Because it seems like both you and your brother have really just followed in his footsteps.
Yeah, big time. I don't have a lot of words for that, but he was always there, you know. He put in a lot of hours into me and my brother. He was in the military and he always, he had to wake up early in the morning and then he's working until 5 o'clock in the PM. And then he always made time, you know, to invest in us, for us to realize what this is hard work and this is discipline and this is two things that you have to have, especially want to become a professional rugby player. He's always been the shoulder, you know, especially for me. My dad was everything for me until before he passed away. I always listened to him, and I know he always had an opinion, and then he allowed me to make my decisions. But I always made my decisions according to what he said. So I don't know why he said it, but yeah, he's my biggest role model till today. So I always look up to him, and I know he's still with me, even though he's somewhere in the skies. But yeah, he invested a lot of time in me, and I'm really thankful for that. And I mean, like, people always ask me, don't you think it's too soon? I said, for him to pass away, I said, he laid the foundation, you know, he left with enough. He taught me discipline and hard work and what I have to do right to be able to become a professional rugby player. So yeah, it took him 22 years to install that. And yeah, until today, I still have the same kicking routine what I had 10 years ago.
I was going to say, Elton, is he the person you credit for that wonderful boot of yours? Because me and Rob were discussing this yesterday. You can kick it very far.
The biggest boot in world rugby, is it not?
Franz Steinfeld. he's always been my coach, my kicking coach since the age of 13. So yeah, I'm still doing the same things. Obviously, as you go older, you get a bit more knowledge. I was working with Dave Ellard was in South Africa for a bit. Carlos Spencer was here, and I worked a little bit with him, and they were just adding to my routine. And I actually looked a lot of Johnny Wilkins and stuff as well, his work ethic and the way he do things. But obviously my technique is a bit different. So when I was still young, my technique was quite, it was different. I couldn't kick the ball so far. And I think 5 years ago, I realized that I'm only very good at close range, and when it comes to like 50 was maybe my max. Something I need to change. So I became more straighter. I became more upright in terms of my kicking routine. And I struggled, and I worked a lot on my core as well. So I struck the ball a bit better, get a good follow through, and yeah, get more distance out of my kicking now.
Is there something in the water in South Africa that seems to produce these guys with huge boots for the Springboks?
Because we play barefoot when we swim. That's probably the difference. We don't wear boots when we swim. Yeah, we play barefoot until the age of 13. And then when you go to high school, that's when you actually get your first pair of boots.
I was going to say, do you and when you link up with South Africa, Elton, do you and 100 Pollard have a few kicking competitions after training?
No, we don't have kicking competitions. Nah. We just, we kick together and we're just assisting each other. I like to look at, I like to look at younger players and to current players. I like to look at their techniques and look at what they're doing and just to say a word or two, you know, something they can tweak or what do you think about this? Because I don't know, I've got this thing of technical stuff, especially when it comes to kicking, the shoulder or the hips or your plant foot and certain things. So I try and assist there where I can. No matter if he plays in the same team, if we can make each other better, that's a good competition.
Definitely, Elton. And just onto sort of your club career with Lions, and obviously it started with the Golden Lions, and you've come in to play for the Lions. I mean, what's that kind of experience been like for you to play in Super Rugby?
Yeah, it's a great experience. I still remember my debut in 2011 against the Bulls. Three finals, we didn't win it, it's a bit tough, but I still enjoy the competition, you know. I believe Super Rugby is one of the best competitions in world rugby, especially for the Southern Hemisphere. It's international rugby. I know the Northern Hemisphere is also tough there by you guys, playing 30-odd games every single week. It's more physical, I feel, because the weather conditions is different. But yeah, I enjoy Super Rugby. You know, it's exciting. There's a lot of speed in the game. There's a lot of intensity and there's physicality as well. So I feel that's where you can actually measure yourself, being able to call yourself the best or to measure yourself against the best.
I mean, I don't want to dwell on the negatives too much, but you mentioned the finals that unfortunately didn't go your way, Elton, with the Lions. But in terms of sort of the players that you played with during that time, I know Faf de Klerk was in the team and a couple of the lads who have come over to the Gallagher Premiership and played for Sale. So what was it like to play with those guys during that time?
Yeah, special. We had a special group of boys. You know, we had Coach Akis as our coach, special man. We had a quality management team. We had special individuals, you know. To be honest, we in 2013 when we got kicked out of Super Rugby, it was quite tough. But then the group stuck together. There was probably two or three of us. I had to go to the Stormers to keep on playing Super Rugby to be able to play for the Springboks. And then Andries went to the Sharks, and then Lionel went to the Bulls. So there was only three individuals that actually just went for that short period to play Super Rugby. But the majority of the group stood together, and they built a culture. A bunch of nobodies, you know, I always say it, because we didn't have a lot of Springboks. There was no big names in that team, and we just stuck together, you know, and we trained hard. We had a big work ethic, and we were just building on our culture and our values, you know, we stuck to that. And yeah, we were just blessed to be able to stick together for 5 or 6 years and trying to achieve something special. Two things that we played well was core values of us is to play to inspire people, inspire nations, and we tried to score a lot of tries. That was two things we stuck to. We didn't win the finals, but hopefully that win against the All Blacks in Wellington last two years ago gave me a little bit of closure.
Elton, we over in rainy Manchester have been spoiled a bit in the last few years. We're all reasonably big sale Sharks players, and of course Faf coming over and, yes, and bringing that influence. Quickly joined by these other superhumans who just seem to set the place on fire. It doesn't seem like it rains so much when they play. You've been rubbing shoulders with them for years. Just how good are these guys?
Yeah, South Africans are a different breed. Puff is special, you know. I know Puff. We played together for quite a while. I'm a special boy. But I feel that move to sell was the right move for him individually from my point of view. It added a lot to his game. The way that they play in the Northern Hemisphere, you could see that in the World Cup. That's one of the reasons why we won the World Cup, because I think Pav's kicking game, say from a 6 out of 10 was up to an 8 or 9 out of 10. That helped him quite a lot. And then Cell Shock signed all the giants. I don't know, Lourdes quality. The two brothers, well, three brothers, their quality. So yeah. I don't know. That coach was just lucky to actually have them. And then yeah, I don't know. It's just I wonder what they eat. I'm still a small boy.
Yeah, we're lucky to watch them at Sale at Elton when we get the chance to go down there. But a coach who's come over to the Gallagher Premiership, as you mentioned, there is Johan Ackerman. How much of an influence did he have on your game when he was coach of the Lions, sorry?
Yeah, big time. You know, he backed me always. He backed me 100%, but he also kept me accountable. And he gave me a lot of responsibilities and a lot of freedom as well. So that's the three things he gave me. Soft-hearted, very genuine. He's very honest. If you're not training hard enough, or if you're lacking in certain areas, he's brutally honest with you, and that's something I love. But he's also a people's person. I think that's the biggest difference that he brought to our team back then. He's one of us, because he played the game. Yeah, but soft heart, but he's really tough. So I was just thinking what I'm saying. But yeah, he makes a big difference. He was a sort of a father figure for a lot of us, especially like Franco and myself, Andre. Yeah, he's a big father figure for our group. And we all wanted to do it for him. And we wanted to be successful and give 110%. Because for him, it wasn't about the results. You know, as long as you give everything on the field, that was enough for him.
It was announced today as well, Tim, that he's going to be going over to Japan and doing some coaching after his time at Gloucester. But and I know you've spent some time over there as well before the World Cup in 2019. So what was that experience like for you? Because I guess you've only known South Africa up to that point and obviously yeah, Australia and New Zealand and Super Rugby. But the move to Japan must have been an extra step for you.
Yeah, it came sudden. It was in 2014. 2013, by the end of the season, I picked up a little tear in my shoulder. So I sat with the doctor, and he said to me, "There's a tear. It's either we operate it and get it fixed, and after that you can play for as long as you want, or we can not operate it, and then we'll have to do rehab on it, and it's a niggle. So it will always be a niggle, but let's rather fix it." And yeah, we fixed it, and it took me about 4 months to recover, and I played half of the season in Super Rugby in 2014, but I felt personally it wasn't enough rugby. And then my agent came up with a deal that in Japan, they're willing to offer you a 2-year deal, 6 months period. Do you feel like it? I said, yeah, why not? Because I haven't played much rugby, so I want to get back to my best after that operation. So that was the biggest reason why I went. I wanted to play from July until December, January. I want to play rugby and make sure that I'm ready to go when it comes to Super Rugby, and then being able to be applicable to play for the Springboks again. So that was the major reason why I actually went, was just to get a lot of rugby and a lot of game time into my body and to to get back to my best after my operation. So yeah, so I got re-signed and became 3, 4, 5 years. Yeah. So I really enjoyed that, and I was very familiar with that when we went to the World Cup. So I actually loved it.
I was going to say, did that the experience of you playing in Japan really help when you went over with the Springboks to Japan last autumn? Did it that? Did you know sort of what to expect from the culture side of things?
Yeah, definitely. Myself, Billy, Andre, Eben, Jesse. There was a few boys, you know, that had stunts in Japan, so we made it a subject. Normally, rugby players just want to go there and play the game. You know, want to train and want to play. But we went a bit open-minded, you know. We made traveling a subject. We made the environment a subject. We made the people a subject. So we actually went broader because we wanted to be the different. We want to look at things differently instead of just the game plan and making sure we're playing winning rugby. We wanted to get used to the environment. We wanted to get used to the culture. How they do things, how they treat people, and to get used to the conditions. So we actually went 3 weeks a bit earlier.
Right.
Japan was a little bit of a sacrifice, away from family, away from home, but it was worth it, I must say. But yeah, there's a lot of traveling, so we shared it in the group prior to the World Cup. This is the way we're going to travel. This is by bus. So we're going to have to adjust quickly when we get there and accept it, and then we have to deal with it. And I think the group did it quite well.
And I guess as well, Elton, that confidence between the group must have been quite high when you touched down in Japan and prepared for the World Cup, because you just come off the back of a very successful rugby championship. I'm thinking first title for 10 years or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think quite a while, yeah.
So you must have been really pleased with that, because I guess the outside world of rugby were like, hang on a minute, South Africa looking back to the best again and could be a real force during this tournament.
Yeah, that was one of our goals, is to get back to top three in the world, to compete against the best again. We wanted to change the whole image of SA rugby, of sort of Springbok rugby. But the only reason, the only ways to do it is to train hard and to actually play well and play winning rugby. We wanted to take ownership of what we're doing, and we wanted to be aligned as a group. So we were all aligned, but there was big competition in the group, to say, because Rassi's got a squad of probably 50 to 7 guys, and if he picks anyone, that guy will put on the jumper and then we'll perform. And that's the blessing we had, you know. We had guys in every single position. We had at least 3 or 4 guys that can step up and win us a test match. We weren't in this position where we had to overplay certain players or overplay the whole group or have the same team or have the same starting 23 or the same 50-man squad. We were blessed to have enough confidence and talent, you know, to actually rotate and share the workload, share the playing load amongst each other before the World Cup, and making sure that we're really, really fresh and well-conditioned and mentally fresh before we go to the World Cup, because World Cup is a bit different. There's a lot of expectations, a lot of pressure from the external point of view, but we just need to focus on ourselves.
Do you think it's kind of been a benefit that you've had quite a few players from South Africa move into Europe and Japan, so that you've kind of built that depth within the squad?
Yeah, obviously, as a coach, you would like to have your whole squad in one country, to be able to, if you say next week there's a training camp, then everybody's there. But the fact that the boys left the country, yeah, we wanted to have them, yeah, but they still had a responsibility in terms of on the overseas side, because they needed to perform. If you go overseas, you still have to perform to be able to play for the Springboks, because Rassi is hard on that. And I feel like, the whole 50 guys are playing. That's the biggest thing. You can't have 50 guys, 23 can play, and then the rest are just sitting, and then next week playing the other 23. So I think the more we play games, the more we play rugby, the more we stay in condition and confident as players. I feel like it's definitely an edge.
And do you think that edge that you say there, Elton, was key for you guys building throughout the tournament? Because, okay, you started with probably the hardest opponent with New Zealand in the group stages, but after that, you'd never look back, really. So do you think that mentality really helped?
Yeah, definitely. It helped quite big time. I mean, I feel the difference was because Rashi was in good nick with the coaches of the clubs, franchises here by us at home. He spoke to every single president and coach in wherever the player is. So they had a good relationship. So he was on par with the training load, the playing load, how many minutes the guys are playing. So yeah, he had a good relationship with everyone, every single coach, because this is the player he's interested in for the season. So yeah, they had that mutual agreement, and the clubs really, really helped us quite a lot. When the boys, when he asked for the guys to be available, they were available. So I don't know how he got it right, but that's something he got right, and it really helped us. Whenever we had a training camp, everybody was there. When we had a lineman camp, everybody was there. So that helped us quite a lot. There wasn't situations where we couldn't get players or things like that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, Elton. And just to sort of fast forward through the tournament to the semi-finals, obviously you guys play Wales, and Rob's smiling there because he is a Wales fan. But you guys get the better of Wales in the semi-finals the day after England beat New Zealand. So what was kind of the squad environment and the atmosphere like going in that World Cup final week, Elton? Because back home here in the UK, a lot of people were sort of writing off South Africa and saying, well, they're not favourites, England the favourites to win the final. Did you guys feel that at all?
Yeah, we didn't. Yes, we definitely had a look at the All Blacks England game. That was probably the best I've seen England play, to be honest. In a while. Just the tempo they played at, the physicality they played at. You could see the plan they wanted to execute, and they executed quite well. They applied a lot of pressure on defense. They knew exactly the way the All Blacks played, and you could see Manu, how he's defending, and Johnny, and they applied a lot of pressure on the playmakers of the All Blacks, so that was clear for us. We couldn't wait for that game to start with them. We prayed for the English. During that week, the build-up was a bit different. The boys were calm, but still very, very excited inside, and can't wait for Saturday, you know. But that week, we actually spent a lot of time in the room, you know, in the meeting rooms. We were analyzing quite a lot because we wanted to make sure that the bodies are fresh for Saturday. And we had limited time on the field, you know. We spent probably at longest 45 minutes on the pitch. So we ran through something, and we know what we wanted to get out of the session, and then make sure that we recover properly. So our training time on the field that week was very limited, but psychologically and mentally, we spent a lot of time in terms of analysing and making sure that we're well prepared for that final.
And Rob, I said there that South Africa got the better of Wales in the semi-final. I mean, because of where we live, all the media was talking about England, but do you get the sense that everyone was writing South Africa off far too early because you'd seen what they can do?
Yeah, I think I've erased that game from my memory, if I'm honest.
Sorry.
I don't actually remember the game too much. I've tried to forget about it. But I think Faf de Klerk was just incredible in that game as well. We've seen it for Sale Sharks, but on the highest level at the World Cup, Faf again was just incredible that day. But yeah, try to forget about it.
Sorry mate. Elton, you talk about sort of the analysing England and, you know, all the fine details you get into, but did you get the sense of the occasion and the sense of expectation on you guys as Springboks from back home? Because I know drawing before the World Cup, there was a lot of trouble back home in terms of austerity and things like that. So Did you feel like this is a big moment for you guys to sort of echo what the guys did in 1995?
Yeah, definitely. We always say that it's not bigger than rugby. Rugby is the main thing, stays the main thing. So for us, it's to perform on the field and make sure that we play hard rugby and we play winning rugby. But to be honest, during the World Cup, we stayed in touch with the people back home. We had a few things that we had in our changing room, in the meeting rooms and at the hotels as well, to be able to see what's happening in South Africa. The support and the expectations, what the people are expecting of us. We stayed in touch with the people through social media and stuff like that. So we read quite a lot and through the media as well. And it was very positive for us as a group to see that we've got the country behind us, even though we're still in Japan. And then, building towards the final, in that week, we actually realized that for us we can really do something special. It's been a while since we had something positive and something big in our country since 2007. And all after Wade van Niekerk broke that record with the running with the athletics, we felt like, yes, this is a great opportunity for us to bring the country together, to inspire the nation and to bring some positivity towards South Africa and the outlook on South Africa. So, yeah. Halftime speech wasn't about us. It wasn't about the individuals. Now it's about the country, you know, and that was quite special. Hopefully we inspired our country and our nation.
I think you absolutely inspired the nation, Elton, with that win in the final. And we spoke to, for my website, we spoke to Faf de Klerk after he came back from Japan, and he said he remembered the moment when he knew it was done, that you guys were going to be world champions. I mean, what was the moment where you knew that the job was done, if you like, because it was a really tense final?
I think for me personally is, yes, when I think the English got a big scrum on us, and then I think Owen missed that kick. That's when I thought, yeah, that's the difference. And then we picked it up, and the nail in the coffin was, I feel, Cheslin's try. That's it,
I said then that I've obviously tried to forget about the Wales game, but on the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I then became very quickly a South Africa fan. And obviously support Wales, but I was in a bar in Bristol, city centre, England, probably around 8 a.m, 9 a.m, the final was. Yeah, with 300 people wearing the white shirt, singing the national anthem. There were a couple of South African shirts. But when Colby went in for that try after that ridiculous step, I let out the biggest cheer in that place, probably the loudest in there. I think I nearly got punched, and a few of my mates didn't speak to me for a couple of weeks.
Is your dad included in people not speaking to you for a couple of weeks?
Probably.
Mark nods in agreement there.
Yeah.
And also, Elton, we asked Faf about, you know, can he remember the final whistle? Can you remember sort of your reaction at full time, or is it just such a blur because of the sense of the occasion?
No, it's a blur. It's
I can imagine.
No, it's a blur. It's you don't realize what you've done. You get your medal, get to the changing room, felt like a normal test match, we won. And then you look at the trophy standing there, then you start realizing, okay, right, we've earned this trophy. But to be honest, when it sunk in is when we arrived at the airport, when we got home, that's when it really sunk into our heads, what we actually achieved. Yes, there was thousands of people at the airport. It was the 2 weeks after the World Cup was quite hectic for us. The trophy tour and sharing it with the nation, sharing it with our country, and just celebrating that moment. You know, to be honest, that's when we actually realised what we've done.
And I must ask as well, Elton, what were the celebrations like for you guys?
There was drinks. There was
just that.
There was drinks.
Yeah, definitely. Not a special. who's official.
And you mentioned sort of the reaction when you came home, walking through the airport. I know there's pictures of so many people wanting to welcome you home and around the streets as well of South Africa. So when we talk about sort of your journey in the game and when you were, you know, being coached by your dad, that must make it all feel so worth it when you see that reaction.
Oh, yeah, definitely. When I got my medal, the first thing I said, I was three things dead. So that was my moment with my dad. Finally, we made it. Like I was injured in 2011 the World Cup, and then I missed out in 2015 at the World Cup, and then yeah, I had to work hard the last four years to be able to be in that squad, that final squad. Yeah, it was quite tough, and yeah, finally I made it. So and then got back. You know, I don't know how my mom got on the team bus, the trophy bus. Somewhere she got onto the bus. You know, we were celebrating and. Yeah, I just gave my medal to my mom and just say, keep it there at home, you know. Yeah, something was for the family.
And just finally on South Africa, Elton, you mentioned it before when you talked about Rassie really connecting with the Super Rugby franchises and you guys are players. So how much impact did he have? Because it seemed from that sort of rugby championship and going into the World Cup, you guys looked a completely different team.
Yeah. He's very simple, you know. He's very honest. He doesn't make things complex. He says things how it is. He makes sure that we aligned. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is when we aligned, you have to take ownership of what you're doing, whether you're a physio, whether you're the doctor, or whether you're the player. We all aligned. We know exactly what we want, what we're trying to achieve. And that's exactly the same message what he given to the Super Rugby franchises. And for me personally, they bought in. It's difficult to tell a player, listen, yeah, this weekend you can't play because you had too much playing minutes. I'm one of those, you know, I want to play every single week, and it was a struggle. But I had to make sacrifices, you know, because there's a bigger picture. It's not just about you as an individual. So we all, yeah, he made sure there's alignment between the five unions. And then he made sure the players understand exactly what he wants from his point of view and what he expects from us. So that was quite clear. And so we just followed that, and there was clarity in terms of on and off the field.
And just finally from me, Elton, and you know, you've got the World Cup winners medal now, you've had it so far and still hopefully more to come in Super Rugby, a very successful career. But also you represented the Barbarians a couple of years ago at Twickenham, and you did manage to be the star of the show that day as well. I believe it was a late drop goal, got the win. What was that kind of experience like for the Barbars? Because Hugo said it was one of the best experiences of his life.
Best week of your life. Yes. It's very different. It's different, but enjoyable. But I think my second one will be better.
Definitely want to play again, then.
Yeah, just definitely. I had an opportunity last year. I couldn't go because I had to be back for pre-season, for off-season recovery, so couldn't make it. So, but yeah, I'll definitely go again if I get that opportunity. You know, being at the Barbers, you know, we had a lot of fun. You're training a bit more, like you're training a bit and you're spending time with individuals you don't even know. And then just through the game of rugby, you know, it just shows that, yeah, we all have game plans and you want to achieve a certain game plan and strategies and stuff during the week. But it just shows for 80 minutes if you're in... Rugby is, it's very simple for me. That's when I realized rugby is simple. The last 30 minutes when we realized, listen, we do this, we do that, and we can win this game. That's how simple rugby actually is. Sometimes we make it bigger than what it is. It was in 30 minutes I realized, and we can get together, you pick 15 guys, spend time together off the field, and you can probably win on Saturday.
Just whilst on that, and the Barbars throw some audacious moves out there and stuff, but just as someone who had played one season at fly half, I usually play fullback, but in my last year of playing senior Colts, I moved to fly half. And I look at players like you that had a lot of excitement with your flair and your unpredictability in whether you're going to run or kick or pass. Probably didn't but that's how I wanted to play. But if all options were on, run, kick or pass, how would you, what would you do? Run, kick or pass?
Depends on the situation, you know.
So, if all were on, if all options were on, which would you prefer?
No, I'll just go for cross kick. If my winger is open, I'll cross kick in his score.
Nice.
And I bet a few drinks were had after the bar bars win as well, Elton.
Yeah.
Drinks were had.
Drinks, thumbs up for those listening on the podcast. Brilliant, Elton. Well, it's been fantastic to reflect on your career, and you've, of course, played with so many great players, and it's now time to put you on the spot. And Mark will take over and ask you for your 15 to take to Mars. So, Mark, over to you.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to Elton. And just before we get into the Mars away thing, I know just how big Springbok rugby is, but you've been there, you've been in around that environment. Just how big a deal is it being a Springbok? Is it a weight of expectation?
It's big. It's big. We're not even close. We're not even at 1,000 Springboks. That's why when you get that Springbok jersey or that Springbok number, it's quite special, you know, because we had guys like Victor, John Smith, that era. They played a lot of tests for the Springboks. So to got into that in that team, it was quite tough. But yeah, that as a rugby player, that is definitely the biggest thing that you could dream of or trying to achieve. And then just to maintain that, I feel that is the biggest challenge in South Africa for me is to be consistent and to maintain that position. We don't have a lot of guys that played over 100 tests.
No. Well, here's as Chris likes to say, the main event. So the deal is this, that the Martians have landed. They've challenged the Earth to a game of rugby. We've done a sort of a toss. We've done the rock, paper, scissors. We've lost the toss, 2-1. So tomorrow, we leave for the four-week shuttle journey to Mars. So, Elton Yances, who makes your best Mars team? 1 to 15, 3 subs, a manager, a coach, a kit man and a water boy. And this we're really looking forward to.
Yeah. I love the way he's got the pen in his hand ready to go as well.
Yes, so. Because it was tough, I must say. But I made it easier. I'll go with Beast.
Oh, yeah, got to. Absolutely have to.
Yeah. John Smith. Tough one. Between John Smith and Malcolm.
Yeah.
3, I went for Trevor. Trevin Yakane.
Oh, yeah.
Me personally, I've got a reason behind it. He's a good dancer. I feel he can keep the vibe going. He loves a good time, so he'll keep the thing going. I went with Bucky's Buta at 4.
Yeah.
Tough guy. Yeah. We still need to win the breakdown.
The enforcer.
Yeah. But I went with Paul O'Connell at 5. We need a bit of leadership. See at 6 because he's one of my good mates. We've been playing together for the last 12 years. He earns that. 7, I went with Richie McCaw.
Yeah. He must have terrorized you a few times.
He did. He irritated all of us. Especially when you're flying and you want quick ball. At 8, I went with Dwayne Vermeulen. He's also a leader, but he's also a funny guy, and I feel like he can give us a good time off the field. He can make a nice meet. He can bring his bolt on. Got a bolt on thingy, so you can bring the bolt on. At 9, I went with Joost van der Westhuizen.
Great choice.
Yeah, he's got a big legacy. I feel he was a great player. And from what I've heard, he's also a great player off the field as well. Even though he passed away, sorry for that. I went with myself at 10 because I want to be part of the group. I can't leave myself, but at leaving, I went with Jonah Lomo, legend. At 12, I went with Matt Gito.
Yeah.
Five, six, yeah. Beer. I don't know why. So you can also give us a good time. Great rugby player, great person. And then at 13, I went with Brian O'Driscoll.
Yeah.
I don't know how did I get to that, but yeah. Brian O'Driscoll at 13. Nice. Tough guy. 14, I went with Cheslin.
Yeah.
Game breaker.
Yeah.
15, I went with Jason Robinson.
Crikey.
That's some speed.
That's a back three, that is.
Yeah.
You've picked in your 15 there, Elton. Probably four or five national captains. John Schmidt, Richie McCaw, etc. Who would you choose as the captain of this group?
The captain of this group will be Richie McCaw.
Yeah.
Richie will be on the bench. Three guys on the bench. I got Dan Carter.
Yeah, nice. Crikey. Yeah, forget about him. Yeah, who's he?
He would have been a 10, but I need to be honest.
All right.
Christian Cullen.
Yes.
He's definitely on the bench. And then I need a forward. I was thinking of a forward. I don't have another forward, but I'm getting there. Head coach Rashi.
Right. Yeah.
What do you say? One assistant coach, right?
Yeah.
Charles Lienhuber.
Yeah.
The reason being, they've got a good relationship, and they also love a good time. So they know how. They're one of us. They're one of the boys. JJ and team manager. JJ, logistic manager. He's the Springbok logistic manager. I feel he does a great job. And then Charles Vessels. He's an operator. Springbok manager. That's my, 20.
A lively group of players when we win that game, I would imagine.
You know, I've got a loose forward. I'll put Warren Whiteley.
Yes.
You know Warren Whiteley?
Yes. Yeah.
He's another captain.
Yeah.
He's my right hand man. Warren Whiteley's on the bench. He made it.
And in answer to that question that Rob answered earlier, you got three choices when everything's on, and you chose the crossfield kick. I guess you've got reasonably good options left and right there, haven't you? Yeah. Jonah Lomu will kill people.
Definitely.
Cheslin on the other way.
Yeah. He's got the height, and then I've got Chessie, definitely.
Yeah. That's an absolute privilege, that is. Thank you. Really good.
Just one final thing before we let you go, Elton. Mark mentioned there that all those captains that you've picked in your team, but you've obviously chosen Sir Khaleesi as well. And I mean, how much of an inspiration do you think he has been for the nation since he was appointed captain?
Yeah, big time. Yes, he's a special guy. He's a people's guy. One thing about Sia that I've realized in the period of time that I've known him is that he made sure that he's got a relationship with every single guy in the team. And that's one of the key things that you have to do as a leader. You should get along with everyone in the group. And that's one thing Sia got right. And he didn't speak a lot. Made sure that his action speaks as well. But when Sia spoke, everybody listened. And he made sure that we're all aligned, and we make sure that we implement the game plan over the weekend. And he made sure that whatever you do during the week, it should always add to the game. And that's something that I've learned from Sia over the last 2 years. We know each other for quite a while. And for him to be Stormers captain, I congratulated him. And then obviously Springbok captain, congratulated him again. It just shows how he has grown as an individual, as a person in as a rugby player as well.
Definitely. Definitely, Elton. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you this afternoon / this evening. So thank you very much for joining us on the latest episode of the Loose Heads podcast. Despite you breaking Welsh and English hearts during the World Cup, we forgive you for that. But it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for your time, Elton.
Awesome.
As always, many thanks to Mark, Rob and Dave for their time this afternoon. Dave, if you want to just finish off with a bit of admin, I know that you guys are relaunching the website and the merchandise.
Yeah, so if you get yourselves over to looseheads.co.uk with a Z and enter code POD at checkout for 10% off.
Perfect, Dave. Well, that has been another edition of the Loosehead podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. Thanks very much for listening.